Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Press record on that and hit this one.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And here in the Rugby Dungeon, streaming live on YouTube and available at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all the rest of it. We are here to talk about an absolutely incredible weekend of European rugby and all the other stories from your rugby week. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining, all of us. JB right there.
Hello, Tim.
In a Royal Air Force jersey.
Yeah, do you like it?
I do.
Isn't great colour. Yeah, lovely colour.
Do you know why I'm wearing this?
Hold on a second, that's an F-35, isn't it, on the front?
Yes, it is an F-35.
Is that the C model?
It is the C model. It's the one
that you find on one of the aircraft carriers.
That is exactly...
Yes.
How do you know all this?
It's, well, listen.
That is bizarre.
You're not the only one that likes planes.
Great military and aviation knowledge.
Wow. Thanks, Phil.
There's a couple of US Navy Seahawks that flew over the AJ Bell on Friday. That was very exciting. But anyway, the reason I am wearing this is because the Navy are playing one of the lesser forces on the Air Force are playing one of the lesser forces on Friday. I think it's the Navy, actually. And they're Twickenham Stoop. So that will be, £15 in or something?
And any wing commanders with a Maserati will be able to park it right by the stand.
Exactly right. There is Maserati parking, if that's important to you. And I imagine for Quinn's fans, it's very important.
If you are watching on YouTube, then I just say, JB, you're... That colour clash between your socks and shirt. You should have paid a little bit closer attention to that.
Yeah, you should have done something.
Phil is here as well.
Hello, Tim.
Nice weekend. Did young Thomas enjoy the Champions Cup?
He did. He got to watch quite a bit of it. He's getting more and more interested.
You're indoctrinating him at an early age. Well done.
Trying to, yes.
Good. Right. How good was that weekend?
It was enjoyable.
Amazing.
I liked it.
Amazing. The standard of rugby was phenomenal. Particularly the two inter-country games, if that makes sense.
The
All-Ireland and the All-French affairs were just brutal and brilliant and test-level standard rugby.
I think this is the best weekend of club rugby because there are so many games of such high quality.
Yes, and if you had the inclination and the free time, you could have basically watched non-stop rugby from 6 a.m. on Friday morning through to 8 p.m. on Sunday evening. Mm. There were so many good games if you throw all the Super Rugby into it.
People complain when they lose their job and stuff. Silver linings everywhere. So, we're going to obviously talk about that. I just want to start, though. JB, hit that yellow applause button.
Hang on. Let's not play.
For referee John Lacey, the first referee ever to enforce the law that's been there in black and white, actually meaning that if a scrum half at the back of a ruck doesn't use the ball within 5 seconds of being told to use it, it's a scrum to the opposition. He did it in the La Rochelle game, penalised Andy Urin. Amazing move.
Yes, and this is something we've been saying since the start of the season when it seemed to come back into fashion to do the caterpillar, line up four or five forwards
as always,
slowly
mate,
work.
As always, mate, some lead, some follow, and we were right there at the very start of this.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm really glad, and I just hope more referees start to do it because you do it once a game, it cuts it out.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
So well done, John Lacey.
Well done, referee John Lacey. There are other refereeing things, good and bad, to talk about, but we should emphasise on the positives. I mean, you mentioned those two games, the one in Paris, the one in Dublin. Which one should we start with? Because they were just incredible.
Paris was my favourite one.
Let's start
there. And it's
there,
fresh
then.
In our memory. Come on, then.
Yes.
We watched that this afternoon.
What a game. And what a great example of what the French national team could be with slightly different selection and some actual coaching. Because these two teams are coached very, very well.
Yep. French coaches.
Both French coaches. A lot of French players. There's a sprinkling of foreign talent like Jerome Kano, like Cheslin Kolbe, like Finn Russell and Simon Zebo. But
mostly French.
It is certainly more French than non-French.
Yes.
Definitely.
Well, there were some changes made by the French Federation, meaning they've got to bring in more kids from the academy. That's actually quite a big one. And more French qualified players. So, it's not the team of mercenaries everyone thinks. Even Toulon have got a solid French base. They all have.
And the young guys, some of the young talent on show, like Dupont, like Entermac, like Teddy Thomas,
where the heck has Talzan come from? Sorry. The winger.
Oh, yeah.
Toulouse winger.
Talzan, yeah. Who only got a late call-up for Huger. He got injured.
Unreal.
He was brilliant. He had many great moments, but that offload for the Medard try was incredible. Yeah. That was a superb try.
I think you hit the nail on the head there, because I suppose the question is, how can the French national team be so poor? And you just said there, good coaching.
Coaching, a little bit of selection maybe, but coaching. It's coaching. It's absolutely coaching, because a load of the same players, when they were playing for France, looked like they didn't know where to stand, didn't know where to look, didn't know what to do at any given moment. Yeah. They didn't even know who was captain in the side at multiple points. The team today, and particularly the Toulouse team, who after 20-odd minutes went down to 14 men, and I've said in the past that going down to 14 men is not, it does not mean the game is over. It can mean the game is over if you're badly organised and badly coached. It does not mean the game is over if you are well organised and well coached. And Toulouse proved that point, because they were 10-7 down when they went down to 14 men. Now, Racing had a couple of yellow cards, but only two sets of 10 minutes. But Toulouse were the better team from that point and deserved winners.
Absolutely. And I think when you look at the French national team, I mean, it's become a mantra of mine over the last few months. If Mathieu Bastereau is your answer, you are asking the wrong question.
No evidence
there in La Défense Arena today.
Of a generation. He is severely underrated. He's absolutely brilliant. Bastereau is a great player who will all miss when he finally goes.
A question. Do you still believe that? Because are you just being
a contrarian?
Yeah, because let me just say, 4 or 5 years ago, when Toulon were winning European titles, and he was everything that he could be, even though he was still probably 3 stone overweight, I would, and I think I did at that time, agree with you. I think now he looks past it. There is only so much longer. You can only go on so long. You lose that explosiveness.
Well, hang on a minute.
And he seems to have.
That's interesting, isn't it? Was he ever explosive or fast?
Yeah, do you remember the try that he scored? It was a 22-year-old when he burst onto the scene against Scotland.
I mean, he
went round the outside of someone.
Let's have a look at that.
I mean, you're going back a few years, but he was an explosive ball carrier.
Yeah, point being, Bastereau's very presence in either of those teams today would have negated massive chunks of what they were able to do with the ball.
My argument about him is he's sort of unique, isn't he? He's like one of those one-off rugby talents that isn't, well, he's just not replicated in the same way that, I don't know, I'm just trying to think of someone else has got, like a Bill Matter. Like, you don't really replicate what Bill Matter does. He just flings the ball around and then it kind of comes off. No one else can do that. And that's sort of what I think about Bastereau still.
My point being, the future of French rugby is what was out there. But interestingly, and what I think more than anything when I was watching that game is, yes, it's the future, but it's also the past, because Toulouse and Racing are playing the French rugby that I remember seeing when I very first got into rugby. And I had this VHS of the highlights of the 1987 Rugby World Cup. And it was the France-Fiji game. It was the first rugby game I'd ever seen. And I was absolutely captivated by it. and it was a French team playing exactly the way that we saw those two sides playing today. And that's the French identity. That's what they need. And I actually think Bernard Laporte has led a very, very charmed life because he had an unlimited checkbook at Toulon to build his reputation. Yeah. Could get in the biggest
men. He didn't show up to work till Thursday. Yeah.
Just to steamroll over the opposition with an unbelievable cast of a side. And now he's at France playing really pragmatic, boring rugby, trying to get massive men in, and it's not the way. They should hand the reins to one of these guys.
I'm just watching highlights of Matthew Bastra now. Impressive. Well,
how many of them have been for the last 3 years, say?
Yeah, but they're still great.
you were right. Six. At one point in time. I'm not sure you're right anymore.
Oh, here he is, full speed ahead. Offload, try. Cheers, boys.
All right, let's talk about this game. Just some of the skills.
Yeah, so just going back to Bird Lepore.
What, having led a charmed life?
Yeah, I sort of agree with you. And his existence in Toulon was interesting because he used to stand there with a flip chart and literally he would say, loss, loss, win, and just highlight like, all the times that he thinks they're going to win and all the away games, just you know, X, X, X.
Give up. Don't bother tying your shoelaces.
Does that on Thursday. And you're right about being charmed because he had Johnny Wilkinson coaching his team and Matt Gitto.
Back his butter.
But yeah, like people...
Carl Heyman.
Yeah, and that's why...
Generational type talents.
I mean, if you think he's charmed, the owner, what's his face, is even more charmed.
Ujulal.
But like, the worst thing in the world that could have happened to him was to get... was to get in that situation in the first place. Because now he thinks anyone can just coach a team and you can assemble any bunch of stars, but you can't. You've got to have a very, very special set of players.
Yes.
That said, the last time the French were truly any good, you'd have to say he was in charge.
Yeah, that's fair. But I guess they always have had and continue to have fantastic players. Deploy them correctly and they could still get something together by Japan.
I would predict that I could get them to... third in the Six Nations table. Me.
And you who are better than Eddie Jones as well with England.
I would do better than Eddie Jones does with England. I'd do better with the French team than they're currently doing. Yes.
Well, very briefly before we get back to this game, and just to wrap up this little part, it seems that France are looking over the channel and not thinking... Ooh, referendums, maybe let's avoid them. They're actually proactively going into a referendum in terms of having a foreign rugby coach.
Is that true?
Have they learnt nothing?
I thought it was an April Fool or something.
It is.
No. I checked the calendar, but no.
No.
This is real.
This appears to be real, and it appears to be a yes-no with uncertain outcome on both ends. And by that I mean the question, as I've interpreted, or as I've read, is... do you want a foreign coach, yes or no? Now, it doesn't say that, do you want a foreign coach and that coach will be Warren Gatland or Joe Schmidt? It could be Mike Ford or Eddie Jones.
Who?
Or anyone else.
Mike Ford?
It could
warn
be
him later.
It could be anyone. Similarly, if it's none, it's not saying they're going to stick with Brunel. It's not saying they're going to employ one of the very good Racing or Toulouse coach or go with Laporte or anyone else.
They wouldn't be doing this if they didn't want to hire a foreign coach and are trying to not get the bad PR from doing so.
Yes, I think you're right, but I think it seems a very weird way of going about it because this
bonkers.
let's just say they want Warren Gatland. They get get a mandate for yes and they go after Warren Gatland.
Imagine.
Gatland doesn't want them, so they then drop down.
They go for a no-deal Gatland.
Well, they're going to end up with a no-deal Gatland.
And they're going to... Rob Howley!
They're going to get Stuart Lancaster or Rob Howley.
Yeah. Oh, God.
That is the exact situation that they are lining themselves up for.
Oh, the parallels are just unbelievable, aren't they? And, yeah,
Sean
fine.
Edwards, you know, Sean Edwards is a legitimate candidate.
Yep.
Because he hasn't been... Warren Gatland's a little bit like Bill Belichick in a way, in that
for any non-NFL fans, he's the coach of the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Well, I say that because the coaches underneath him haven't really covered themselves in glory. You know, you don't think of them as like great coaches in their own right. You only think of Belichick or you only think of Gatland. Somehow Sean Edwards has kind of avoided what has happened to Howley, and he might actually be one who goes to France and gets his job. That would fit nicely.
Mm. It'd be interesting to see if he wants it, because...
Why would you not?
Well, is it always best? I think with these specialist coaches who are specialist defence coaches, you become so specialist. Can you do everything? And an example I'll give, which is probably a bad one, well, two examples. Mike Ford was a specialist defence coach and has had mixed success since leaving that. Rob Howley, as an attack coach, when he coached Wales in 2017, when Gatland was preparing for the Lions, it was not exactly a good performance.
Yeah, so Mike Ford is interesting because he did come in as a defence coach, but he's undoubtedly a better attack coach.
Let's stick with this game. Because he'll come up again later,
massive,
I'm sure.
Yeah, massively.
So, right, red card, yes or no?
No. Yes.
The red card handed to Zach Holmes, fly half for Toulouse, on 20 minutes.
I would have gone for a yellow myself. And the reason I say that, so I'm okay with it being a red. And I think Luke Pearce, he handled it well.
Explained it very clearly.
His explanation of his logic was very clear. I think he could have done something slightly different. And he said that he was looking for mitigating factors.
Yes.
And I think there were potentially three that he certainly ignored. The first one would be, he was saying, is the player ducking or falling into it? And like, Imhoff was.
He was.
He certainly lowered his body height.
I was delighted when I heard, exactly as you say, Luke Pearce explain that. I just want to have another look. And it's a red card, unless there's a mitigation. Was the player dipping in? Let's have a look. And I thought, brilliant. Sense is going to prevail. It'll downgrade it to a yellow because Imhoff is clearly dipping. And that is mitigation. So
yeah.
But he looked at that and thought that Imhoff wasn't dipping.
He said, well, the language he used was falling. Now, I think this is a bit of a grey area in world rugby's laws because there is a point when, particularly if you've got two forwards running each other on a try line, both will be fully dipped over. Both will be, their upper bodies will be 90 degrees.
Yeah.
No one is going to say that should be a yellow card for a high, or a red card for a high shot. This is another example in that.
Although red cards have been given, but actually, since World Rugby did sort of clarify the laws, that's happened much less.
It has happened less. It's on the same trajectory, but so I can see there being a mitigating factor. I'm just not sure what the law exactly states about it.
I'm not clear on it.
The other one was, so there is contact with the neck. I actually think the majority of the contact is shoulder on chest rather than. Yeah. I think there is the hint of the upper shoulder and arms on neck, but I'm not sure all the force goes through. And the third one, and probably the most important one, is his initial reaction when he saw it in real time and he was in a good position was play on. He actually called for a line out.
He did.
And he was calling for a line out. I think he would have been best to go back and look at it in real speed and not have only the slow motion when you only get the whiplash effect does make it look bad. And as soon as you have the whiplash effect,
well,
and you stop it.
Well, also what makes it look bad is Imhoff really going for it as well. Oh, with the
it was a big hit.
Yeah, it was.
It was a big, bloody big hit by not the biggest man, Zach Cole.
But, you know, you've played at a good level, Phil. JB, you coach lads on a Tuesday and Thursday night. That's how I would coach someone to tackle. This is the issue I have. If I was coaching Tok H this Tuesday night, then I would probably say, right, we've seen the rules that have been brought in. We need to work on the safety of our tackle. You need to get a wide stance. You need to plant yourself, and you need to dip. But that doesn't mean you can't still make a dominant tackle. And the position Zach Holmes gets in would be textbook.
I don't know. It seems clear to me. He hit him in the head.
No. Listen. I'm not saying he didn't hit. I'm not saying there wasn't contact with neck or anything. I'm saying Zach Holmes has done everything that World Rugby would have wanted coaches to have gone away and got their players to do to reduce the amount of head contact. You can't eliminate it. We've said this time and again. You can't eliminate it, and nor should you always have punitive action when it does happen.
Yeah.
To the extent of red cards, at least.
I still red card him.
Was it reckless? Was it malicious? Or was it clumsy? I'd say it was none of those.
So the fact that he has done it means it's reckless.
No.
That is like the law, though, isn't it?
Yeah, the definition of reckless is taking control out of a situation that then leads you to do something, to hit someone in the head, for example.
Yeah, the problem is, like, yeah, you are right.
that... Well, just look at the body position. He's in a textbook body position.
So that's not, that to me does look high.
So he could have gone lower.
That is the...
I get your point, Tim.
He'd have hit below Imhoff's chest, maybe the bottom of the ribs.
If Imhoff was upright.
Yeah,
so I do get that point, but I think he could have gone lower. And he did... Holmes tried to put... This is where the recklessness comes in. So I'm sorry, he's up by the touchline. He's tried to put a massive hit to drive him into touch.
Taking into touch.
Which is great. In doing so, you do take out some of the control. And he's ended up making contact with the head.
You have to make that decision, don't you? And you know, because 90% of the time, you're going to be fine. Like, 95% of the time, you're going to be fine. But you have taken some of the control, and 5% you're going to hit someone in the head and then get a red card.
What's the coaching point for that?
There is tackle lower. Tackle lower is the only coaching
unlucky
point.
Unlucky, carry on doing what you're doing.
Which is why I come back and say Luke Pearce actually handled the whole situation very well, explained his thought process perfectly. And it was very, very sporting the way that Zach Holmes took his medicine, the Racing players came over and shook his hand. All that was exemplary. Everything about it, thinking that there would be fans, non-rugby fans maybe watching this, it would have given exactly the impression of rugby that you want to give, that it's a respectful, honest...
Yeah,
sport.
That's a very good point.
Everything was brilliant. The respect for the referee, the way the referee handled it, the way the players dealt with it, the coaches dealt with it, all brilliant. So I don't want to be... I'm not having a downer on it. I understand why it was given a red card and I accept letter of the law and everything. I just wish that a little bit more of that empathy and mitigation was accepted, because I think Zach Holmes didn't really do much wrong.
And I do agree that...
A yellow card would have gone...
And that's where I am with the yellow card.
Doesn't Zach Holmes land... his shoulder on his head when they hit the ground?
Oh, I don't know. That wasn't even looked at.
No,
I think once you go onto the ground,
I'd have to look at it again. But yeah, when I watched that in real time, I was like, yeah, it's a red card. I can see that.
Well, Luke Pearce's initial thought was play on, let the boys play.
Yeah, which was interesting. I would have liked to see him look at it in real time one more time. But just on Luke Pearce. So he had a high pressure call to make late on.
Yes, he did.
Don't like
2 minutes to go when Racing steal the line out, score a try, and he goes back for the Nakarawa pull down on a Toulouse arm. Now, I thought that was a great call, handled very well. JB?
No, I don't think it was a good call. And the reason I don't think it's a good call is because I think you need to referee the line out as you would in any other circumstances. So if that line-out was on the halfway and that occurred, they would have played on, gone through the phases, and never be looked at again. And that's how I want it reffed.
So you don't think the law... You can go back and look at the last three rooks, three breakdowns.
Basically, no. Like, you're employed as a referee to use your interpretation and blow the whistle in real time.
So are you calling for a change to the law?
Yes, basically.
Do you think he applied the law correctly?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I thought the law was applied fine. It's a process I have a problem with.
So I actually like the... Because in midfield, if it doesn't lead to a try, fine, it doesn't really matter. You won free-flowing rugby. When there is a try, in particular a try that would decide a match, I want the right decision.
Right, let me give you a hypothetical for a second, because this is maybe one thing that I think is an
unintended... Before you do that, can I just count your point, which is... If we had video refs today, Neil Back could never have cheated his way to a Heineken Cup victory. And is that not one of the great moments? I mean, the point of cheating in the dark arts is it's only cheating if you're caught. And now you always get caught.
You do pretty much always get caught. Although not always, we'll come on to that. Ironically, in a Munster Edinburgh game, you don't always get caught.
Yeah. No, true.
Go on, Tim.
Hypothetical. Imagine that line out was... that line out had happened and Racing went through six or seven or eight phases, took up 2 minutes of the game, maybe till it got to 79 and a half minutes, and then they'd gone back and checked it.
Yeah.
The clock would have continued from wherever they got to. There has got to be a line that's drawn, and again, it's a fuzzy line, and I'm actually all right with it being down to individual referees' interpretation. Some let it go a lot longer. I sympathise with what you're saying, Jay, where there's a point at which you go, whatever's gone is now gone.
Yeah, some referees have enormous advantages, like 2 minutes of advantage. I don't like that.
You can check the grounding, you can do all that, But actually, if there's a set piece, it's your job to blow that whistle as and when you see it.
And if you go back, because if you go back, say 2 minutes of advantage, and you go back, the clock should be reset.
Yeah, that is a good point.
You're
absolutely right. Now, how about these changes to the lineouts, which I've been considering? If you don't compete in the air, you don't have to throw it as straight as you otherwise would.
Generally, I think referees do that. Because then it doesn't have any material effect.
Yeah, some do. I have seen it.
Yeah, that's really. It feels pedantic
it's
when they
really
do that.
Pedantic.
So like if the opposition go up, it has same laws apply. If the opposition stay on the ground, the new rules would be the outside arm of your line out. So it's still straight in.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't go outside of your outside shoulder,
like your left shoulder.
Yeah, I think that should be a law now. So if basically you've got to compete every time. And if you don't compete, if you decide you want to, you know, go all out blitz or some such thing,
you're not as pedantic. The refs aren't as pedantic. Yeah. I like that.
Agreed.
Another great rule change.
I think the one thing they teach referees is like material effects, because there are times when there are clear penalties, but actually, it's had no effect on the game. So let's just play on.
Yeah,
as they should.
Yeah, I'm with that.
The skills on show, just insane.
Phenomenal.
It was bonkers rugby.
It was beautiful. And it was interesting. So Paul Edison pointed this out on Twitter. It was interesting to see Toulouse target Finn Russell. So they got their big runners. Interestingly, the big runners, but also when DuPont moved to 10, DuPont and Cheslin as the steppy runners targeting Finn Russell.
Oh, that is interesting.
And Finn Russell's defending stats... JB, you love a fly half's tackle count. Tackles made 6, missed
7,
8.
Ooh.
And it was
the difference is though, he's really good at rugby. Whereas other fly halves that miss a lot of tackles aren't.
Well, he didn't have his best game. I don't think did old Finn.
But he might not have his best game, right? But I've been thinking about this mainly because of some of the transfer activity in the Premiership clubs and some of the money being splashed around. He might be one of the few players that's absolutely worth every penny.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Every penny.
I am not saying that he's not worth it. He is. Yeah. He is one of the best paid players in the world. He deserves to be one of the best paid players in the world. He didn't have his best game.
I'd not even considered this. We've had some messages and points in on Twitter. In fact, one of them is from Paul Millam, who said, "How many beers do I need to take for my bath? Is it going to be a long pod?" take a six pack, Paul. You are living the dream. And that's on a Mother's Day as well, which is the point that Keen Thomas makes. He says the timing of Mother's Day on one of the best rugby weekends of the year. Yeah, well,
it's poor, isn't it? Very, very poor.
That is.
But if you're a good mother, you'll let your sons and daughters and daughters. God, I nearly forgot that. And fathers watch the rugby because you're a great mother.
Me and Thomas spent a good few hours watching the rugby, watching the highlights, so Claire could do whatever Claire likes to do, gardening and sewing, stuff like all the rest of it.
So Toulouse have earned the right to go to Dublin, which is an interesting point, and we can segue into this game with this, which is, or there might be some more stuff you want to bring up with that game, but how do Leinster manage to get a home semi-final? Because it's meant to be home country.
It is.
But actually, when you look at the Leinster website, Wikipedia page and all the rest of it, it is clearly listed one of their home grounds is the Aviva Stadium.
I don't mind it. I mean, like, let's face it, Ireland's not a massive country. It doesn't have a ton of stadiums. I think if Connacht would have made the semi-final of the Champions Cup, they probably would have played it at the Aviva too.
They would, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No, they would.
They would.
I don't know if there's a way around it.
I know.
Windsor Park in Belfast.
Do you send them to...
It's a different country, obviously. Yeah. It's difficult.
Do you send them to Tormund Park?
Tormund Park, but that's not big enough for the occasion that they'd want. So I see it's a conundrum. It's a tough one. It's just it's one of those... There maybe isn't a good solution.
This is the refereeing equivalent. It's the podcast equivalent of a referee looking back on video analysis to see if someone stole a ball in the lineup's going to try. That's what we're doing.
Well, but if you could understand if you were a Toulouse fan going, huh?
I wouldn't care. I simply wouldn't care. I want to go there and beat them. And if they want to do it in their own supposed backyard, even better for us.
Yeah.
So yeah, agree with that.
Anything more on Toulouse Racing?
No, just well played. Yeah, what a game.
One of my favourite moments was when, you know, they had a box of water, box of Evian on the pitch. What, yeah. They were playing over, they were rocking over the top of. This is incredible product placement. I hope they got paid handsomely for that.
Laissez-faire attitude Love it. Of the French.
Love it.
So, Stockdale reacts well to intense pressure.
Oh, Stockers!
Don't, Jay.
Stockers.
Don't. I didn't actually see all this game. I've only seen the first half, so I had no idea what you guys were talking about when you walked in the room. So why don't you tell me about it?
Well, let's start from the first half because...
Okay, let's do that.
The intensity that was... I think it was probably started by that just phenomenally aggressive Ulster defensive line. And the pack, it was set by the pack.
Amazingly.
Yeah. And a couple of years ago, if you said to me that the Ulster pack would have been not only matching the Leinster pack, but setting the intensity in a European quarterfinal, I would have said you're mental. Because the Ulster tight five for a number of years has been soft. Well, no more. Because it was a hell of a performance by that Ulster pack. Led by the 2 second rows.
If you want to cry, it's okay, Phil. No one's judging you.
Well, I might be crying when we get to the Stockdale bit. So anyway, they put the pressure on them. And Leinster, they were a little bit rattled for a period in time. The Treadwell try, Treadwell who was superb. Treadwell try was a good example of that. Putting pressure on Leinster and forcing them to do silly things. Now, speaking of silly things, Stockers.
Oh.
There are very few wingers in the world who would have gone from the position when he picked up the ball to 40 yards out with half a dozen men between him and the try line to getting over the try line. The problem is, anyone who gets it over the try line, any winger in the world who gets over the try line in there has to score.
Oh.
And unfortunately for him, he didn't just go over the try line. He was still running upright 6 yards over the try line before he tried one-handed to put the ball down.
Well, yeah, like
as Dave Carney tackled him.
Jump in the air and put the ball down.
He is an unbelievable
winger. Is it
worse
than Freddie Burns?
It's different. He's under slightly more pressure and it's of the same magnitude. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Because he could have slid 5 yards earlier.
Or held the ball in two hands to put it down.
Yeah.
Or fallen over. Or, don't know.
When was this? Was this right towards the end?
So this was after about 50 minutes when Ulster were, I think, 13-10 up at the time.
Yeah.
So it would have given them a 10-point victory with about 30 minutes left on the clock.
Oh, no.
Well, eight, potentially 10.
Eight, potentially 10. The worst bit about it is Leinster played out, won the ball, and from a ruck, 5 minutes later, Conan picks up. O'Sullivan was soft around the fringes of the ruck. He breaks two tackles, draws Stockdale, offloads to Byrne, Adam Byrne, and Adam Byrne goes in. And it was a 14-point or 12-point swing that was the moment that changed the game.
Yeah,
it really was.
Oh dear.
I have to say, well played to Leinster. Conan was brilliant.
He's a beast.
And Ross Byrne at 10, so he didn't always kick to control the territory the same way that Sexton would have done. He kicked sticks and kicked off the tee very well. He took his try very well. But his final penalty to the winning penalty...
He was shaking off a bit of cramp.
He was on one leg.
Yeah.
He could barely run away from that, and it was not an easy kick. It was 40 yards out on the 5 metre line.
Yeah.
So, fair play, Leinster.
Patrick Logan simply tweeted, bollocks and proud. Pride. Oh,
proud. So proud.
Pride.
It was an amazing performance by Ulster, but sadly, as Jay, as you like to say about Ulster... The gallant losers.
Yep. Well, it's what you enjoy more, isn't it? You enjoy the losing more. You're desperate for this lack of success.
Well, I would have taken Stockdale putting that ball down.
So I think Anthony Dennison's got a point in terms of this game. Like again, the intensity, the brutality of it was brilliant. And isn't it weird? I sort of felt a pang of guilt as I said that. Like, all people are going to think I'm being irresponsible, saying I enjoyed the brutality of it. But no, I absolutely loved the massive collisions between huge men, and I'm not going to apologise for it. I bloody loved it.
It's eggs, that, isn't it?
It's brilliant. And
you're just not serious about player welfare, Tim. That's all it is.
Right, so Anthony Dennison, I think he might have a point here. He said, lads, do Leinster ever stay on their feet in a ruck? They were diving all over the place in almost every attacking ruck they had. Now, I think we've got an Ulster fan on our hands right there.
I'm watching the highlights now of this damn game, and they haven't got the bloody Stockdale miss.
What are you talking
about? making the highlights?
Oh, the 3-minute highlights.
Could you do highlights before we do the podcast?
Sorry, yeah, I could do. Yeah, I should do.
get your head in the game.
Yeah, sorry.
So, what do you think about that, Phil? I thought it was a bit of a mess at the breakdown.
It was.
And it did. The game overall was so entertaining, but it did change the dynamic of that match.
And I thought it was refed reasonably well. I don't think it had as big a material. So I agree with the point to a point, but all teams do it. And if the ref lets you get away with it, you're going to do it more. Yeah. I actually think the worst game for that particular problem was the Edinburgh-Munster game.
Oh, yes.
Particularly first half, because it seemed that the defence were always getting... The defending player, Jacklin the ball, was always getting the benefit of the doubt, even when it was disrupting good attacking play, albeit the Tyburn was a clear yellow card. But when they weren't supporting their own body weight, they were guy just on their elbows on the floor, hugging the man, hugging the ball, not supporting their body weight and getting away with it.
So, you've just seen it, JB.
Oh! That is heartbreaking. It's not as bad as I thought it was going to be from the way that you described it.
In the context of that match, that was horrendous. Look. If it was 30-0 up in a Pro 14 game when they've already qualified for the playoffs, who cares?
In my mind, right, it was, he's got like one finger in the air, he's celebrating.
He was smiling.
He's smiling.
You look at the try again, look at his face.
I'd be smiling.
He was smiling. Like, but, yes, he's made it.
And he puts on the footwork as well. Oh.
It's a hell of a finish.
The footwork is so good, an
effort to get to that point.
I mean, no other player would get there. And this is interesting, because there's one sort of narrative across the weekend. You can draw a few of these occasions where players that had incredible games, I don't want them to be remembered for the mistakes they made. Stockers is one of them. The other one... And just sort of jumping, we don't have to jump to the game entirely, but the other one would be Pierre Schumann for Edinburgh, who got absolutely hammered in the game, got hammered after the game. Well, I bet he got genuinely hammered after the game to try and drown his sorrows. And fans have been really getting into him. And
have they really?
Yeah, because there was what was the score at this point? Edinburgh were...
Edinburgh were leading, 13-11, I think.
Edinburgh were leading by two. Edinburgh win themselves a penalty... And then in the immediate aftermath of the penalty, Pierre Schumann sort of puts a little sly shoulder in on Tadhg Byrne.
So he did drop his shoulder. They were
walking past each other. Yeah,
he made a conscious effort to drop his shoulder, which was stupid. Tadhg Byrne then goes down like he's been shot.
Jay, what are you doing, mate?
I'm reading the comments.
All right. Oh, cool. What are they saying?
Not much, really. No, not a tremendous amount. Go on.
So on that, part of me feels sorry for Schumann, because Byrne milked it
Glad you said that. Tadhg Byrne, you're an amazing player. You're a fantastic athlete, brilliant specimen, warrior of a guy. That was a disgrace, way you dived.
Part of me thinks, Schumann, you absolute moron.
Both of those things are true. Schumann, that was silly. Tadhg Byrne, you're a disgrace.
And part of me, if I was a Munster fan, I would be saying, you beauty Tadhg Byrne. How streetwise is that? He's seen him drop the shoulder. He's gone down like he's been shot. He's won a penalty.
One of the hardest men in Europe.
He's an absolute warrior. Yeah. So Tadhg Byrne.
We're talking about the same Tadhg Byrne here.
Tadhg Byrne, right, when he's jackling a ball.
Yeah. And you can't move him.
Yeah, four men plow into him.
You can't move him.
Doesn't move an inch. Schumann, who is a big boy, but glances in with the shoulder and he flies across the ground. So, yeah, if I were Edinburgh, I'd be very frustrated at that. I would also be frustrated at the first try. The first Keith Earls try, which was a brilliant bit of quick thinking by Keith Earls. It was monumental stupidity by Henry Purgos.
Yes.
I mean, he was offside and he slaps down. The scrum's collapsed. He's offside and he slaps down a pass.
Yeah.
What on earth was he thinking?
Bonkers. Yeah,
but then...
Conor Murray.
Conor Murray. How the ref did not go back to this, I do not know. Because Conor Murray reacts so stupidly and does a judo flip and Purgos lands on his head, shoulder, neck area, which I think actually, so we're discussing this off air, this was very reminiscent of the
Liam Williams, Danny Kerr.
Danny Kerr incident last week, and the precedent was set in my mind, and that should have been a penalty to Munster and a yellow card against Purgos, reversed and a penalty and a yellow card against Conor Murray.
Agreed.
It should have been. It should have ended up with
a penalty.
Totally
agree. Because they, yeah, I don't understand how that wasn't.
He didn't even look at it.
I can't. And the TMO didn't say. Maybe have a look.
Someone's just been flipped and landed on their head.
I don't get it.
Yeah, I really don't get that. Now, you add those two with an Edinburgh hat on. You add those two incidents, and you think, God, maybe we were robbed.
But I know what you're going to say now.
Yeah, Edinburgh in that first 10 minutes had
doing?
three kickable penalties inside the Munster 22. They went for the corner on each of them. They didn't score anything. They came away with 0 points, even though Tyburn was in the bin for the third penalty. And then Munster scored the 7 points. So, yeah. Edinburgh, if you'd have taken the points... Or,
this is a European quarter-final. Yeah. So how does this happen?
I don't think it is bad to go for the corner, obviously providing you score. Or you continue...
Oh, really?
Or you continue to go for the corner.
A potential 3 points or a guaranteed seven? What would you go with? Of course, if you're going to score, you're going for it.
Exactly, right? So, like, look at Exeter. Exeter did it against Saracens, right? Now, weaker teams, like, unfortunately, Edinburgh are... They get nervous, go, oh God, we've just had three, we haven't got anywhere, let's kick the sticks. The right answer to that question is, carry on going until they break.
Is that what you tell to the guys at the betting shop? You've just just sold their car and they're thinking about betting their mortgage. Yeah,
carry
go
on
for
going.
It.
Keep going.
Your ship's going to come in this time.
But so the logic of that I like, because it should be we are confident in our driving maul, or we're not confident in our driving maul and the pick and goes.
Exactly. Yeah.
It shouldn't be, we're confident in it, but we'll try three times, then we'll switch tactic.
Yeah, that's what bothers me about this.
Yeah. Now, in these big games, I would have gone for the sticks. But if you're good, if you think you're good enough to do it, why after three does that change? Because Edinburgh did change their tactic and they took the points after that. Admittedly, slightly easier
and
kicks.
And what's more is... There was a picture building of Munster giving away penalties, Munster giving away another pen in their own territory, and you just kind of release the pressure valve and let all the pressure that you built up out, which might end up in a yellow card penalty try kind of situation. You just release all the pressure. So I agree with you, go one or the other, but equally, and they should never have started a European quarter final with that mindset. I think it's brilliant how positive they came out. But that's why you don't get to semi-finals, because Leinster and Munster know what getting to semi-finals is
absolutely
about. And it is about taking every single point that you can.
And funnily enough, Exeter don't know what it's like to get into a European Cup semi. So, you know, maybe something in that.
And if and when Exeter play Saracens in a Premiership final, let's say, then you can bet they will take 3 points early in the game when they get the chance. Well, we'll see them.
Yeah,
we'll probably get to see.
Yeah,
that'd be interesting.
I think they would do.
But I think they'd go for the corner. I don't know. Okay, that was good. That was nice.
It was I'd love to have been in the Aviva. I'd love to have been in those two stadiums. It was amazing.
So the more I encounter the Irish, because I encountered them this Friday at the AJ Bell.
Not talking on Twitter.
Yeah.
Not talking on Twitter.
Not talking on Twitter. It's a begrudging respect, let's put it that way. Every time that I encounter it, I just get more and more impressed by their fan base, by the organisation. I was in the AJ Bell, as in the press room afterwards, and even the press are pretty impressive. Like, they showed up with a ton of journalists who all actually asked questions, like really good questions, really engaged. There's probably more Connacht fans in there than there were
Sale fans, frankly. And they definitely made more noise.
11,000 Munster fans in Edinburgh. Unbelievable.
It's wildly successful.
I don't know the exact number of Ulster fans in Dublin. There were a lot. There was a big turnout.
Whatever they're doing there, it's quite amazing. So yeah.
On that note, I think we should probably touch on both of your presenting experiences this weekend. Yeah, as JB on Friday night.
Yes, I did
presenting live on Facebook.
The pre-match Facebook live. I got to interview Simon Orange, Steve Diamond, Jonah Ross. Who else do we do?
Craig Moynihan.
Yes.
Which I've been listening to on Rugby Dungeon this week.
Yes, it's an interesting story, to put it mildly.
It's a very interesting story. So I've heard two other ex-forces speakers who, in similar situations, who had to retire from military, and the three of them are three of the most inspirational, speakers I've ever heard.
It almost makes you feel guilty that you haven't done something worthwhile.
Yeah, a phenomenal individual. Yeah, a really, really good interview that. But yeah, did you enjoy the Friday night?
It's bloody stressful. It started very well. I thought it started really well. And by the time I got to Steve Diamond, like my last interview, it was just all over the show. You got people talking in your ear.
That's why he came and chatted to me. It's such a, you know.
No, I had him after. I had him after you.
Maybe that's why I...
I copied your questions. and then I've got a very anxious Jono Ross joining me who, on his best day, is not chatty. When he wants to get his fingers taped up before a quarter final, is even less chatty and forthcoming. So, but actually, it was a great experience. It was awesome. And I tell you what, if you want to be in TV, if you want to be operating cameras. I think that's called.
You don't want to bother doing that. Don't try.
Yeah.
No point. I'm just pulling up the ladder.
Yeah. Production or anything like that. What they do at Salford Uni is amazing. Like when they said, do you want to work with some media studies students? Not so much. But they're not media studies students. They're like, they are the most professional set of students I've ever met. God knows what I was doing in uni, but it wasn't that. Waking up at 2 in the afternoon and missing neighbours.
You were protesting to try and have a socialist government.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to stop the war or something. Remarkable setup and really well done. So, my whole team there.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Well done. You almost made me miss my tram stop.
Oh, really?
So I had a few beers.
High praise indeed.
A few beers out with work, and I was watching it on my phone with headphones in. And I got into it. I was listening to, I think it was on your interview with Simon Orange at the time, which was good.
Yeah, so Simon's a very interesting interview. And certainly the other one who I really enjoyed is Hugh Jenner, who is the analyst. And I think we should get more analysts on the club analyst on TV because they know everything. And you can probably get some stuff out of them as well because they're not as well media trained.
Yeah, it's all about that.
Yeah.
We don't need to talk about the game very much because it was not very entertaining. Congratulations, Sale, on your first semi-final in 11 years. That's fantastic in and of itself. Yep. I was disappointed that Connacht didn't go with a fully loaded pack.
I didn't understand that at all.
You've earned a quarter final. I mean, they are really battling in the Pro 14 and could get Champions Cup qualification if they win their next two games.
Work this out for me, right? If you're going to take a weakened pack, why put out your first team backline and put them at risk? Just give a weakened team. Don't like put your star player out there to get absolutely written off because the forwards aren't giving you front, go forward ball. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and you're a full strength backline with a half strength pack. He's never going to do anything anyway because you're going to get back football.
Yeah. So Sale went through. Connacht might be counting their losses there because they're not only lost, but they've Finlay Beelam looked like he had a bad injury.
Bad hand injury.
Important player.
Oh my word! So do you know what that injury was?
Like split the webbing in between his
fingers.
Yeah.
So if you imagine not that I've ever watched Star Trek, but if you did the Vulcan greeting, imagine tearing your hand down through the palm like that. And that's what he's done. And I was in the tunnel with you, I think, too.
Yeah, it was pissing blood.
Oh, my word.
As he was walking off the pitch, by the way, with the play going on all around him and the referee not stopping it, he was stopping every few metres to puke.
It was awful. The worst thing was he was coming into the tunnel, and I'm very, very... hang on. Let's be clear. It's not the worst thing. The worst thing is that his hand was busted up. Not how I felt about his hand being busted up, right?
No, so Jay. Yes. Are you okay? Yeah, are you okay? Yeah.
Oh,
you're like one of those people on Facebook that just said, Oh, I had a bad day. Desperate for people to ask.
Yeah. I'll DM you, hun.
Oh, hun, what's happened?
But as he's walking, he's throwing up because he's in so much pain. I'm kind of going white because I know he's got to pass me. Like, quite, you know,
you're
quite
clawing at the walls to try and get out of there.
Quite close proximity. It's like, oh, God, this is awful. It was a horrible, horrible injury.
Mm. So Sale have got to look forward to
La Rochelle.
Away. You going, Jay?
Hopefully, yeah. That's the idea. I'll try and create a job for myself and go.
And then on Saturday night...
Because you're neutral, but as a neutral.
As a neutral, as a Rugby broadcaster, or whatever it is we categorise ourselves as now.
That is what I did notice a few times, more than a few times. You kept saying we.
Well, I'm doing it on behalf of Sale Sharks.
I know.
You know, I'm not allowed to say we on Sale Sharks. I'm strictly a neutral.
And then on Saturday night,
yes,
we had on BT Sport...
Yes.
Live with a star-studded cast, with Flats, with Ugo, and with Kvesic, who was very good.
Matt Kvesic was great. Flats had his shirt pinched, and so like 10 minutes before we were going on air, he went, oh no, I've got no shirt. So he would have either had, and it was pretty chilly, he would have either have had quite an, it wouldn't have looked great, a blazer over a V-neck T-shirt look, kind of.
Okay.
It wouldn't have been a strong look.
Yeah.
It would have looked.
He's not got
little...
the physique really to carry that look off.
I don't know if it just wouldn't have looked right.
Very Karate Kid 3.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Maybe it would have worked if he. Yeah. It looked the sort of thing Phil Collins would have done in the '80s, with sleeves rolled up. So.
Yeah, we need to bring that back. Sleeves rolling up. No, actually, no.
So hastily, he managed to get hold of a Harlequin's sub jacket
and a Worcester hat to...
and then wanted to be balanced, so got a Worcester
dressing a man of that size is not easy at short notice, is it?
So but it was good. And Chris Robshaw, what a hero that man is. I absolutely love him, and I cannot, he's got to be in the England squad
instead of
the guy's a warrior.
Instead of who?
Instead of, well,
you can't say Brad Shields because I've already removed
wasn't,
him
wasn't Jack Clifford in the latest England wider squad?
Might have been.
Give me him? 2 seconds and I'll tell you, but yeah, go on.
That's Cocker's Law. You've got to remove someone.
Yeah. Totally.
My England Six Nations 2019 spreadsheet is opening as we speak.
Guy's a hero, warrior.
Clifford was in there, Brad Shields, Tom Curry, so Mark Wilson, they're not going.
Brad Shields and Jack Clifford, gone.
Ben Earl was in there as
gone.
Well.
No, but even if he trims the squad and goes to a World Cup, Robshaw instead of Brad Shields, you've got to. You have to. Brad Shields has not earned that spot. Chris Robshaw is earning it every week.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, there are other people I'd go with before Robshaw, but I definitely agree with... Do you know who I would go for? I think he's been playing brilliantly the last few weeks, is Tamana Harrison.
Very abrasive.
He really seems to have come back into form. Whether he ever gets another shot again, I don't know, but he's looking good.
Because his last game was a 28-minute appearance, something like that, wasn't it? I think I'm right in saying that.
Oh, Australia.
He had him and
first test.
Yeah,
him and Burrell.
No, I don't know.
At slightly different times, I think, but...
Yeah, I don't know any other coach that has done that.
Because he did it with Nick Azikwe as well.
Let alone three times.
The Shepherd's Crook
comes
out.
Yeah, he's weird.
Sees what he wants.
But like,
I've seen enough.
Doing it three times.
Well, it worked brilliantly in Australia. Everyone was going, what a genius. What a visionary. No other coach would have done that, because you're right. And it really paid off.
I wonder if we look back at that Australia tour, you know, as a bit of a false dawn. Well, we obviously do, because it is a false dawn. But Australia just not being as good as we thought that they were at that time.
Let's wrap up the other ones in the Challenge Cup then. So Harlequins got through. They will go to Claremont, who... bonkers game against Northampton to round off the weekend. 99 point game.
These two always rack up big scores.
Yeah, it's insane. It was crazy. That stadium looks amazing. I've never been to the Marcel Michelin. I would love to.
Yeah,
we should make that happen because it's not far away from Barcelona either. Like 2 hour drive. Just saying.
Looks amazing.
It's more than that, isn't it?
No, I don't think it is.
Oh, I think it is.
I don't think it is. All right, let's find out.
You carry on talking.
And La Rochelle pumped Bristol as well. That stadium, I've been to that stadium on a match day for a Challenge Cup semi-final, actually, and it was amazing. It was phenomenal. So, those will be great occasions, those semi-finals. So that looks really good.
Ooh,
have you just looked up How far?
Isn't it on the sort of
6 hour drive?
Yeah, six hours. I was going to say it's mid,
6.5
mid
hours.
France. On yeah, the, on yeah. The east towards,
I've also gone got Perpignan and Clermont. Confused. Perpignan is very close. Clermont is not.
Well, they're
close.
Both playing yellow, Jay.
Yes,
so.
That's right. They both used to be good. Whereas only Clermont are good now. Yeah. Right, okay, so yeah, it's not...
Not a two-hour drive.
It's not 2 hours.
6.5 hour drive.
Or eight hours on...
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bus.
So I'll tell you what, we'll return to the Champions Cup in a minute. Let's just go around the game of rugby for a moment.
Let's do that.
So Andy Farrell is a grandfather, age 43.
Oh, yeah.
And he has got a six-year-old son or seven-year-old son as well.
Yeah, uncle. Owen's new baby's uncle.
Yes, which I was thinking, actually, you could have the Owen's lad and Farrell's
playing
son
together.
Playing uncle and...
Hang on a minute.
Has Owen Farrell had a boy?
Hang on a
Do
minute.
Do we know? Has Owen Farrell had a boy? Is it a boy?
Don't know.
Is it a boy or not? Do we know?
I remember.
We need to have some ceremonial, like... in fact, whether it's a boy or a girl, have a ceremonial, like Lion King,
especially
hold him up on the mount.
I just remembered something. Somebody told me this as a conspiracy theory, almost. It was an Irish person. And they said, isn't it convenient that Andy Farrell has got a son who the Irish think, who wants to get Irish qualified now? So they can.
He's like 10 years old.
Start them young. I mean, before you know it, I mean, he could be the next Marcus Smith. He's got the genes for it.
Andy Farrell is properly English.
Coaches Ireland.
He's one of those guys that Andy Farrell is the kind of guy that were he Fijian, you couldn't pay him enough money to not want to play for Fiji.
He's coaching Ireland. He's coaching Ireland.
Yeah, because he wasn't given the big job with England.
He was sacked from England.
He's fired, wasn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
That seems like a bad decision in hindsight.
And then he's going to make his son pay by formulating the best defence in the world.
But,
although it didn't work this year.
But he's doing it. He's doing it that's his fathering method. He's doing it as he's gone to Ireland to make Ireland win a World Cup just to teach Owen a lesson that he needs for his own career.
The IRFU have got their eyes firmly on Andy Farrell's 6-year-old son to play fly half for Ireland. I'm telling you now, that's what they're doing.
So, two questions. Is Andy Farrell now the hardest grandfather in the world?
Yes, go with yes.
It'd be very close.
And is he the best looking grandfather in the world?
Probably yes as well.
Yeah.
Yes on both counts.
Yeah.
Other coaching news?
Oh, go on.
Leicester Tigers have made a play to stop the rot.
How many games has he got to stop this rot?
Five. Mike Ford is in. It was reported on Monday in the rugby paper that he wanted. No, I don't mean it. I know that's fine.
Oh, right, okay.
That they were trying to get Sean Edwards as well on a short term thing till the end of the
season.
Wow. So the rugby paper are writing. It could be nonsense. It could be true.
No, it would stack up. I mean, he's allowed to do those sort of things with his contract, so it would stack up, certainly.
Wow.
So, how do you feel about the Mike Ford coaching appointment?
Mike, shall I go first, or do you want
to... Okay, well, so I can say this. I can summarise this really quickly. It is, if you need a measure of how seriously Leicester are taking the genuine threat of relegation, there is your answer. Because it was before the last game. No, it was after the last game, but before Leicester played on the Friday night and lost to... Who did they lose to last Friday? I can't remember. Northampton,
yeah.
After that game, one of the questions I said to Jordan Murphy is, have you spoken about, or will you now, use the relegation word in your chats with the players? No. It was an absolute no. In fact, it might have even been before the match. No, not at all. Then Leicester lost, Newcastle and Worcester won. That's changed. They have reacted quickly.
So I've got so many things to think about on this. Okay, so number one, Mike Ford. A character who gets a mixed press at best from people inside the game. But the one thing which is universal, you ask anyone, he is simply one of the best coaches out there. You know, his reputation as a coach is formidable.
So that's to distinguish the coaching rule compared to the DOR rule.
Yes. And that's, you know, there are players out there who will openly say they don't like him, but he's one hell of a coach. So, good move there. Number two.
But that's... And there are other coaches. The way some people have been speaking about Richard Cockerell over the weekend, whose stock has risen again, is that they loved the fact they didn't like him.
Yes.
Like, they liked that they knew exactly where they stood, that he was tough as old boots, and that they get very clear and honest... clear honesty from him. So the point is, sometimes the two things can be true. Or you can enjoy the fact that they're not.
Well,
people
I don't
that
know.
You're,
I don't know
mates
the reason.
With.
I couldn't possibly tell you the reason that Mike Ford gets him expressed, but I just do. But it's interesting, even with that. You know, like you say with Cockers, as long as they can appreciate he's a good coach, great. Number two is, if you're going to do this, you should have done it 6 months ago. So it doesn't really matter you bought in a coach with 5 games to go. You should have done it at the start of the season, or you should have had someone helping Jordan Murphy immediately. This is a complete failure at Leicester to do the right thing at the right time. And number three is, I hope it doesn't succeed. Because if it does succeed, it sets a horrible precedent that you can salvage your season by just appointing a new coach. And that is almost like the football thing of, like, oh my God, 5 games to go, let's get in a brand new manager.
Getting Dave Bassett or who were the ones? Harry Redknapp.
Yeah.
Sam Allardyce.
Allardyce is a good one.
Yeah, so I don't want rugby to go that way, because rugby is a far more complex game and coaches need time.
What would it have done, though? Go back 6 months, I think it would have neutered Jordan Murphy.
But going back 6 months, it looks like he needs to be.
They needed something doing differently this season.
And Jordan Murphy probably...
I'm not saying that's the right answer.
No,
but
I'm not saying Mike Ford's the wrong answer. I'm just...
Yeah.
I guess my point is that there's a lack of clarity in the big decisions repeatedly at that club. And I hope that's what they can find some clarity and consistency with moving forward.
So, betting time. Do you believe that Leicester are going to stay up? And will the Mike Ford appointment contribute to them staying up if they do?
So when you look at the fixtures, it's quite conceivable that this weekend coming is Worcester's best chance of getting a win. They're away to Wasps. Their run-in is horrible. But this is the other little subplot. If Worcester go and win at Wasps, this is quite probably the only game that Wasps are going to win, because their running is horrendous. So Wasps lose to Worcester, that might get Worcester a bit closer to being out of trouble, and it drags Wasps right into the...
Wasps, whose next two games are Exeter and Saracens.
Oh, that's an easy run-in.
Yeah.
And then they play Gloucester and Quins.
Oh, my word.
They play the top four. Wasps play the top four after Worcester.
Oh, they have got Bath as well.
Oh, sorry, no. They play...
Yeah, Bath.
Oh, it's Bath and...
Bath and Quins, yeah.
And Quins, yeah.
But... That is not... So Bath is the next easiest game. But Leicester...
Yes, sorry, Leicester. No, I think they're fine. I don't think they're fine. I think that they'll survive.
Well, it's just, you know, it's badly managed.
Friday the 12th of April, Newcastle. Wow.
Yeah, that is massive.
Wow. Hey, shall we just have a quick intermission before we move on?
Just before we do that, I'd just like to say, I think as a short-term appointment, this will work, because I think sometimes you just need to freshen things up a little bit, and a change is good at a rest and all that kind of stuff. I think there will be a bit of a bounce under Mike Ford. I think it will only be a short-term solution. I think it cannot be the long-term solution. So I think this will be enough to get Leicester Tigers out of trouble. I might be proven wrong, but I think it will. Long-term, as in next season, they've got to look at doing something completely different, and I'm not sure what that answer is.
Yeah, I agree. It's something completely different. Maybe the answer is Mike Ford.
Well, maybe. Well, if the news of Lavanini is true, them signing him, that's the kind of signing I can get on board with.
That's
Thomas Lavanini, the Argentinian second row.
He's a hell of a player. I was trying to work out
a player.
Who that was then. Yes, I like him.
It does feel a bit
Argentine
like...
The Argentine Etzebeth.
Yeah. Him and Guido Petit are monsters.
Those two, Etzebeth and him, always seem to get into it when they're on the field together.
But that, it almost feels like the Will Spencer signing over again. Because everyone said, oh yeah, Will Spencer, a bit of steel in the engine room.
I think
room.
He'll come good. Him and Lavanini.
You're right. I think the two of them, that's a class pairing. But we've seen it before. Callum Afoni and then Denton and then Williams and Thompson. I think an
all-action number eight is an absolute must for them.
Yes.
Like, who's that other? Or another Argentinian? Who's that? Like, if the Argentinian, Issa or Matera?
Well, Matera was there. He was there.
At Leicester.
He was. As a 20-year-old, he was at Leicester.
Didn't make the grade. Goodness me. I can't remember what I was going to say. Oh, yeah, I was going to say this. Why don't you go and sign up to Cornerstone?
Well, no. We'll talk about that next week.
Next week, actually. In that case, go and buy a rugby shirt. In fact, go buy our rugby shirt. You can find that at... What's that link, Phil?
It is akumashops.com/eggchasers. That is Akuma, AKUMA, shops.com/eggchasers.
I'm not in my normal Egg Chasers merino wool top, but Tim, remind me why we love these tops so much.
Well, I mean, full hoops.
Uh-huh.
Style.
Exactly.
Beautiful merino wool that keeps you warm or cool,
depending on
the weather.
How does it know?
It's incredible.
Clever stuff, isn't it? It just knows.
Very clever stuff.
Yeah, it is. I think it's artificial. It's that artificial intelligence I keep talking about. I think it's that.
How does Peter Omani know exactly when the ref is not going to ping him?
Who knows?
He does.
It's like that.
It is, isn't it?
Linking the Premiership to Europe, before we jump on, it's interesting just seeing George Shooter, who's been very, very outspoken lately of Leicester, but he's not talking about that today. I just seen a tweet from him, which I thought was quite an interesting little point. He said he was talking about how amazing the weekend's rugby has been. Mm-hmm. International level pace and intensity, Irish and French derbies in particular were unbelievable. Great advert for the game. How far back have English Premiership teams slipped? How many could have competed today? Ooh. Outside of Saracens,
well,
you'd say Exeter, and then none of the others, could they?
The question is, how would they compete and against who?
Well, against those teams that were on show this weekend.
So Glasgow, I mean,
who got humped?
They got beaten up badly, didn't they?
Yeah. So maybe let's focus on against the winners.
Yeah. So I mean, they could have half the Premiership could have beaten Glasgow by lots of things. Does that Edinburgh, Munster? Well, Munster really did quite a number on Exeter. Really, you know, truth be told, and they're like the second best team. I guess it's just the style and the matchup on that particular day. That would be the biggest one for me.
I think his point's interesting, that outside of Exeter Saracens, who are well clear at the top of the Premiership, I don't think any of them would...
But what are we talking about here? We're talking about the best team in England, Saracens.
Yeah.
The two best teams in France. Definitely the best team in Ireland, if not all of Europe, in Leinster.
And the next best in Munster.
Yeah.
And then the third best in Ulster.
Yeah, so it's only really
who are
Ulster.
Not that far behind.
It's only really Ulster that are sort of like the aberration. The league is... The teams that are here are pretty much the teams that should be here. And I'm not sure any team outside of the teams that are here could be there, if that makes sense. It's sort of... You know, it is what it is. Exeter could, I reckon.
Exeter in a couple more years, yeah. I think. Because they're getting more and more experience of the knockout rugby in the Premiership. They will get more and more experience of the...
I think Gloucester would be competitive.
Well, just on Exeter as well, they will get more experience in Europe. But also, it's interesting to see more and more of the spine of the England team coming from Exeter.
Yeah.
So Noel Slade, Cowan Dickey coming off the bench, Harry Williams. So yeah, I think they're getting the right team and getting experience of big games for Exeter. So they will start competing, but not quite yet.
You see, Stuart Hogg's clearly got the memo from Exeter
about
bad lids.
Yeah. Start making your hair stupid. Start getting comfortable with stupid hair now. That was the memo.
Do you think that was a bet?
Must have been. I don't know. I've got no idea.
Dreadful. It was dreadful.
It was dreadful, yeah.
As a man who's had bleach blonde locks a few times, when I was admittedly a lot younger than Stuart Hogg is now, it's not too bad.
Did you play better or worse with blonde locks?
So
was there a psychological edge you got?
At Lancaster Uni, used to play the War of the Roses against York every year. Although not in my second year because we got banned for having a.
So did you go red hair?
No. We probably should have gone red hair. We were all bleach blonde.
What?
So there was.
You're going with the white roses.
That's a really good answer. Why did you not go for red hair?
Don't know.
The red rose.
Too much hassle. So we used to buy.
What colour was your kit?
Red.
Red.
What was that? White.
Didn't think this one through.
Yellow. What? Yellow and black.
This game's a farce. Let's just move on.
But I don't think I ever conceded a try against York in all the games I played. So I'd say yes. The years that I was there,
I'd like to have had that where there was one annual match. We used to at Exeter and then at Bath, they did this. They had a varsity game which was either at the Rec or at the Exeter ground.
I can't imagine that went well for Exeter.
Yeah.
Did it really?
Yeah. We get all the students down. So it was at the Exeter ground and. Or in the back, when it was Bath, it was at the Rec. But it would rotate who you played your varsity game against.
It wasn't always
the same team.
I thought Bath were pretty good at rugby, put it mildly.
Well, Bath and Exeter are the two best teams in England at the minute.
Oh, there
you go. So, you know, my two alumni are the two best. I think.
Better than, like, Loughborough, etc.
Yeah.
I remember watching Loughborough playing Coldy a few years ago, like many years ago, actually, now. And a bit of skill from the break, he sort of went on an outside break, sort of rounded the 13, 15 comes on a cover tackle. He chipped, regathered and scored. I was like, wow, that's a different level.
It wasn't Phil Burgess, was it?
I don't know. Why do you think?
Just he's a former Loughborough. I'm sure he played number 8 for them, but he's England Sevens.
Oh,
so
no,
it sounds like the kind of skill set that he...
It was like a long, long time ago.
Loughborough used to have this little... I used to hate them because they used to have this thing because they win so much at sport across the board. They used to have this little saying called thanks for coming, which was...
so patronising.
Like, you go there to play a game, you lose, and as you're getting on the bus, you have these like students going, thanks for coming!
That's awesome.
Bastards.
the Manchester... Varsity is quite tasty now because for years Manchester Uni had battered MMU.
Yeah, they'd be miles ahead of MMU.
But MMU now are awesome.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but with all these new unis, they plough a load of money into sports now because that's the main way to get money out of students. So that's what MMU are doing, and we've got scholarships and all sorts, 4G pitches. Yeah, it's impressive stuff.
So seeing as we're working our way down the leagues,
no, don't.
Shall we touch on the? Tok H, where's the bell?
Let's not.
No, Tok H lost. They had an absolutely rubbish tight head that got dicked, and as a result, lost in the massive crunch game.
Unfortunately, that element of it is not true. The tight head, JB, his scrummaging and his jumping in the lineout were both very impressive.
I love a level rugby.
Yeah.
You're the jumper in the lineout and the tight end prop in the scrum.
Yeah, let's put it this way. We were cruising for the first 20, and frankly...
Do you have anyone over 6'2" in your side?
I'm probably one of the shorter guys in the team.
How come you're jumping?
Just because it makes sense. So we've got two... 6'4", we've got a 6'4" second row, a 6'5" second row. We've got a 6'3" flanker.
This is Maverick next level new age coaching.
You were lining up to lift.
Yeah, I line up to lift.
So you line up at three often.
Oh God, we've got two. Yeah,
I'm not that interested.
it doesn't really matter. But we've got some big boys. We were cruising, but fair play to Oldham. They really stuck it to us. They kept on going. They had two men in the bin. They had a red card. We couldn't score after our first 10 points and. Yeah, they did us, and fair play to them. They did really, really well. So that is that. And they're a good bunch of boys as well. They all stay down at the club later for some beers. So that's always good to see.
So what you're in other words, what you're saying is
God.
My fear is that my sons will never understand me.
Hold on.
Okay. What is best in life? Crush your enemies. See them driven before you. You hear the lamentation of the women.
So yeah, they came to crush you.
And oh, listen to this.
Hear
this
the lamentation of your
this
women.
This is genuinely brilliant. You'll love this, right? So the Oldham boys come down on a minibus. Some of them got to get off because, you know, what are they doing? And they've got this minibus and the driver. Now, Didsbury is not a friendly place to park, you would agree.
It's there's not much parking.
Well, so Oldham's not that far away.
Yeah, but it's a good night. Those boys.
Oh,
because they're going on a night out.
Yeah.
So instead of finding a parking space, right, the bus driver pulls up outside the Crown, which is in Didsbury, where we go for a beer straight after. Flips, opens up the bonnet, okay, puts on the hazard lights, pretend it's broken down, and they go in the pub for 2 hours. How good's that?
Brilliant,
awesome,
fair play.
That's genius,
isn't it? Just right. What? Have we spoken about Saracens yet? I seem to have forgotten.
I think we've spoken enough about it.
Okay.
So Saracens put 50-odd points on Glasgow. Glasgow, who scored after 2 minutes. They scored a really well-worked try, and you thought, this might be on. The upset might be on. No, it wasn't. The relentless, unstoppable force that is Saracens, they just turned the screw, particularly in that second half, and had way, way too much power and, I guess, guile out wide. Strettle, Liam Williams.
Frightening amounts of power.
Do you know what? I thought the pack were awesome.
Jamie George was brilliant. Itoji was brilliant.
Those two had fantastic
and,
games.
Alex Goode, actually, slotting straight in at 10 in a European quarterfinal and dominating.
Yes.
Now, that's an interesting point. Because, you know, if I was an international coach, I'd be thinking, I could use that guy. You know, I could use that guy in my, I don't know, World Cup squad.
In a match day 23 for a World Cup, say.
What is wrong with Eddie Jones? You know, he's decided, for whatever reason it is, he's not going to go with Alex Goode, who, as I've mentioned multiple times, is the best all-round rugby player in England. Full stop. He just is. He can do absolutely everything.
Well, here's the thing. When Elliot Daly arrives there at Saracens, I'm absolutely convinced that Elliot Daly is going there to be a 13. And an out-and-out 13. Ooh. I don't think he's going there to be a winger or a fullback. I cannot see. It doesn't seem any logic in it unless he's going there to be 13. Because
agreed.
Marcelo Bosch is retiring.
Yeah. Lazowski's been covering there.
Yeah.
I think Lazowski's a cracking 13, though.
He's not as good as Elliot Daly, though.
I don't know. I think he might be.
Really?
Well, yeah, because
so he's very good.
What's Elliot Daly? He's very, very fast, good feet. And his kicking game. Not out of hand, for the record, just as, you know, off the ground.
He's kicking out of
hand. His passing isn't great, whereas Lazowski is a genuine option at 10. So I think having that second distributor there, it does make...
Ugh. It's not to say, by the way, it's not to say that Elliot Daly couldn't go there and be a great fullback, or be a great fullback for England even, but it's just interesting that I think it will almost seem a little farcical that Elliot Daly will go to the World Cup as a 15 and he will not have played that many games in that position at club rugby.
Yeah, because he's still not playing there for Wasps.
No.
He won't be because Willie LaRue plays there. He would actually probably be, in the pecking order based on experience, the third choice 15 at Saracens, but first choice 13, which is a bit ridiculous.
Pick me your Saracens backline next year.
Spencer.
Faz.
Barrett's injury, by the way.
Is it bad?
It didn't look very good. He'll probably miss the rest of the season looking at it. He turned right over on his ankle.
That's
literally
the worst person that they could lose.
Well, yeah. He's the glue in that team, isn't he?
He is.
So Spencer, Farrell, Barrett, Daly,
Maitland. Lewington.
Williams.
Maitland, Williams, Goode.
Maitland, Williams, Goode.
Yeah.
Williams, Goode. Oh, my God. They're stacked,
it's a good team. With then Lewington on the bench, Lazowski on the bench,
Lewington wasn't even in the matchday squad.
Wigglesworth on the bench.
Lewington wasn't even in the matchday squad.
Yeah,
for that game,
he's not been playing very much for them, which is interesting. He's been fit.
He'll be back. They're immense.
Yeah,
I still have Lazowski.
And Strettle can't retire, can he? Playing like he is,
I think he is retiring.
I think he is retiring,
he's retiring. But like, what's he going to do? How else is he going to earn 100 and something thousand pounds a year? You know, he could go somewhere else, surely.
He could.
In fact, do you know where he's from? Oh, no.
Yorkshire.
No, he's
from... No, he's Preston.
Lim, isn't he?
Of Lim or... Well, he might have played for Hoppers, actually. I'm just saying.
He played for Rotherham for a bit. I'm sure he played for Rotherham.
Rotherham's the club he came through at.
I'm sure he's a Lim schoolboy.
Yeah, he's definitely from around this area. I'm sure he is. Not Northwest.
You thinking Tock
Sale, they need some wingers.
I'm thinking Tock H, yeah.
One thing Sale don't need... So he is 35, admittedly.
Is he really?
Yeah.
He's in phenomenal shape for 35.
He's 36 this year. 36 in the summer.
Wow.
That's so, yeah, Lim.
I mean, it'd be interesting, though. Like you must get to the point at that age where you go, pre-season. Oh.
Don't know.
And also, like, you never... That cycle that you're on of like pre-season, relentless training, Christmas, you're not at home, you can't get on it, you can't go away when you want, you can't go skiing because your contract says you can't ride a... Actually, he rides a motorbike.
And not only that, Sale take the whole team skiing.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, they did.
No, they didn't.
Well, what did they do?
No, it was just Diamond and then went skiing. It wasn't the players.
And I'm pretty sure it was the players.
No, it wasn't.
I'm telling you, it's definitely the players because I was talking to... I don't think it was.
I was
talking to them.
Okay.
Diamond's definitely taken his boys skiing. 100%. Okay. 100%. Actually, I'll double check that.
Anyway. Well done, Saracens.
Yeah.
Another bit of rugby news before we wrap up and do the predictions next week. Have you seen Hayden Parker's kicking record?
Oh, my word. Sunwolves won again.
Yeah.
Sunwolves. No wonder with a guy like him, dead-eye kicker.
Well, Sunwolves playing at Waratahs who were champion 4 or 5 years ago, Waratahs who beat current champions Crusaders last week.
Wow.
And Sunwolves won. Sunwolves, this is 2 weeks after being told that they are getting cut. They will no longer be a franchise.
Oh, is that right?
That is true.
When did that happen?
About 2 weeks ago.
Oh, what a mess.
Oh, well. And part of the reason is former Highlander, Otago fly half, Hayden Parker, who is on 27 from 27 kicks this season, including the one from the touchline in what looks like 40 mile an hour winds is just unbelievable.
Bujalal's going to sign him. He's like, Lee Halfpenny incarnate.
Absolutely phenomenal. But last season, he had his current run of 27 kicks was, so there's a punctuation of one missed kick. His run last season was 38 consecutive kicks, which set a new league record.
So I remember Ram van Straaten hitting 48 out of 50 for...
Chris Patterson holds the international record at that, doesn't he? Because what's his face?
Yeah. Dan Parks
had all the long-range ones.
Brilliant, that is.
Oh, it's in front of the posters. I've got this one, Dan.
Hayden Parker, age 28, weight 80 kilograms and 5'8". He better be bloody good at kicking, is all I'm saying.
Well, do you know what? This weekend has shown, actually, and recent times has shown, that's bollocks. Because there's tiny guys are having massive impact. Well, Faf de Klerk, for goodness sake.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Tiny guys. Cheslin Colby.
Yeah, that Toulouse back line. Yeah, right. Particularly Dupont and Sebastian Bezzi when he came on. And Ntamack is not
and
a
Rattes
big
for La Rochelle, the fullback. Yeah. He's about 11 stone wet through.
Tell you who is not 11 stone wet through for La Rochelle. Danny Prisso.
Yeah, and him and Antonio and Victor Vito, they've got an enormous
goodness pack. Me, I am looking forward to some that scrimmaging on the Atlantic coast.
When your boys go there.
Well, I've got to be there as an interested neutral.
Right, let's wrap this up.
Yes. Quickly, semi-finals, I've just seen them playing out at this point. So, Leinster-Toulouse.
I can't see Leinster losing at home.
Agreed.
It will be interesting. So Leinster were missing a few players and Ulster did almost, not quite, but almost made them pay because of that. Mm. I think if they are missing as many players, then it will be very interesting. If they've got all the big guns back, I think they will, their experience, their capability, they will win by 10 points.
And by the way, I hope Dan Levy and Rory
Best.
Both
could be
season-ending
injuries.
And the other game, will be Saracens
Munster
at the Rico Arena.
Saracens.
Munster will be a very good team to disrupt and minimise Saracen's scoring. Saracen will never score as freely as they did against Glasgow against Munster.
It'll be like a Munster home game, though. It's an odd one, picking the Ricoh Arena. Having just played at the London Stadium, there are other options nearby. Even the Medeski Stadium.
But who picks it?
I don't know.
So I wonder if they have to submit these proposals. I mean, actually, who wants? I mean, no disrespect to Wasps or Wasps fans. Who wants to go to Coventry to watch a game of rugby? I mean, like, I don't.
Well, to be fair,
I mean, if your team is based there, fine. Obviously, you go watch Wasps. But as a set piece event, I don't want to go to Coventry to watch a game. I'd rather go to, I don't know, Manchester. Or
it's very good
London
for. It's very good connections for airports and motorways and stuff. So it's good. It's good, like, to get to. Yeah. But
hey, less than 2 hour drive for us.
I know what you're saying.
Isn't it?
Yeah. So, Saracens will come through that one, and it'll be Saracens Leinster final in Newcastle.
I agree. I don't know who's going to win that, but yes, that's exactly how I see it.
And
going
it'll be an all French Challenge Cup final.
And do you think that the Air Force will beat the Navy on Friday?
No, actually, I've been studying their teams. I think the Navy will just edge them.
And I'm pretty sure the Air Force will take them again. So, do you want to do the Premiership predictions?
Yeah.
I've got them in front of me.
This is crunch time, Pro 14 and Premiership. This is crunch time.
All right, and so first of all, Pro 14, Friday night, Munster Cardiff.
That's huge because Cardiff and Connacht and...
Cardiff and Connacht are both level on points.
Level on points, and there's another team that are around that Benetton as well.
No, that's the other pool. Ospreys.
Ospreys, that's it.
Ospreys are a little bit off, but yeah. Definitely Connacht and Cardiff are... really pushing for that third spot.
Yes. So this is the big weekend. I don't know what team Munster will put out, but Cardiff will be going fully loaded, having had a week off.
Yeah. Munster at home.
Glasgow, Ulster?
Ulster.
Glasgow.
Glasgow. Cheetahs, Ospreys?
Ospreys, because they have to.
Yeah.
At Cheetahs, though?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, nice trip.
Zebre, Connacht? At Zebre?
Connacht.
Connacht.
Okay. Ooh, I don't like that one. Scarlets, Edinburgh. At Scarlets.
Well, so these two are both pushing your beloved Benetton for the third spot in Conference B.
Yeah.
And that's a Champions League and a playoff spot.
Yeah.
Well, that brings us nicely to the next game, which is Leinster Treviso. Ugh. At Leinster.
Hard luck.
Well, actually...
it's happened before.
Yeah, the boys beat them in Dublin last year. And
Leinster will have been. Tenderised them for you, JV.
Exactly.
Well, that's interesting, Jay, because you're saying you'll go to the Atlantic Coast as an interested neutral. that's quite a difficult place to get to. Whereas Dublin is incredibly easy for someone who's actually a fan of a side to go to.
So yes, I mean, 20 minutes from the airport. It's a 40-minute flight.
I'll be attending the final when my Treviso boys get there, finally. and last, oh my God, how do we not start the show with this? Just a build-up.
Southern Kings Dragons.
Southern Kings Dragons are playing! what an incredible fixture
this
is.
I mean, if there were relegation, this would be a hell of a battle, yeah. Because Dragons are bottom of Conference B on 19 points. The Southern Kings are 1 point ahead on 20 points.
Goodness me.
And they both have... -200 points difference.
Wow, not wanting to open a big discussion.
Sorry, Tim. Yeah, let me read these points differences for you, okay? Leinster, +303. Ulster, +17. Benetton, +38. Edinburgh, +33. Scarlets, +8. Southern Kings, -278. Oh, my God.
Wow. No, I don't want to open up a big conversation here, but what's going on with Welsh rugby? It's all gone quiet. Are they just carrying on as they were?
No idea.
Pretending like the whole RGC thing wasn't a thing?
Yeah, never happened, boys. So just everyone carry on playing. Is there a way that both these teams can lose this? I mean, certainly rugby is the loser here. But can they both lose?
They're both losers.
I mean, the only way that this... Yeah, yeah. The only way this game can... turn out to do itself justice is if one of these teams doesn't show up and they're both fined points.
The only winner in this game is the people that are quite often people who have houses right by the ground and are often bothered by people parking and clogging up their streets, because that's not going to happen this time.
Yeah. Oh, and just to make it worse, Somebody has got to pay for the Dragons players to fly to the Kings. What a pointless excursion that is. It's just a waste of carbon.
They should just play it on like...
flip a coin.
Like the last, or the last video game there was. Just get them playing online, an online rugby computer game. And
Rugby 2008.
Yeah, Rugby 2008.
Yeah, I mean, they're literally going to be melting part of the ice cap to get the rubbish Dragons players to meet the rubbish Kings. So anyway, good luck both sides. May it's the best
of,
team win.
And Dragons v Kings got kind of a Game of Thrones epic feel to it. It is.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Could not be less.
Two of the most fearsomely named sides.
Yeah.
Both terrible. Anyway.
Right, Gallagher Premiership.
Gallagher Premiership,
the real
time.
Rugby. Here this we is, go.
This is huge.
Sale Harlequins Friday night.
This is big.
It is
so
huge.
So if Sale want a top four spot, they've got to win.
They've got, yep.
If they want to consolidate a top six spot, they've got to win.
Yeah. Win it, not winning is not an option.
Sale have got a good run in. I like their... They've got three home fixtures and all their games are winnable. I think they've got the best running, and I think they're going to get definite top six. I think top four went when they lost against Newcastle.
Some problem with Sale is they just sometimes don't quite hit their stride.
Well, they've got AJ McGinty, and they're at home. They're going to win.
I agree. Do you want to do an extra half hour on this one, or do you want to move on to the next one?
Let's keep it moving.
Bath-Bristol, West Country Derby.
But not in the West Country. Because I'm actually in Bristol on Friday night and Saturday. So when I saw this fixture... I was like, oh yeah, I'll go to the Rec. No, it's in London.
Why is it there?
It's at Twickenham.
For what reason?
It's the Clash. The Clash.
Right, fine.
So I'm very disappointed in that, actually.
Yeah. Bath v Bristol at Twickenham.
I just think it's all right for Saracens to do it because they're nearby. And they don't quite have the history of Bath or Bristol. This is a West Country game. It should be played in the West Country. You know, Ashton Gate is a big stadium. Not that they play the game there. But, you know, there are other stadiums around
there.
Well,
actually, in the West Country, there's not.
It's only Ashton Gate. It's only Ashton Gate.
There isn't anywhere else they can do it, to be fair. Twickenham's... It's maybe not too bad, actually. I mean, yeah.
It's a couple of hours on a train.
Because they will have a load of people there.
I hope so. Well, I guess as long as it sells out, it'll be fine. So it has to sell out.
Bath will win.
I would go with Bath, yes.
Bristol picked their best team against La Rochelle.
Saracens, Newcastle? At the Alliance?
So Saracens will freshen up players.
Yes. Equally, Saracens will still win.
Yes. Now, Newcastle should be aiming for one or two losing bonus points.
Yeah, but running them close.
Not only that, they won't, you know, a lot of teams are thrown by the plastic pitch, not so much Newcastle.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Maybe a couple of losing bonus points.
Which will make it very, very tight at the bottom.
It would.
Bristol could get sucked in.
Yeah, they're not out of it.
And then, because we're very lucky we get a 4:30 game, the circus continues. Leicester go to Exeter.
No, Leicester host Exeter.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
No chance for Leicester in this.
I would go... Yeah, zero chance.
Leicester will get a bit of a bounce, but Exeter will just be too strong, too good.
I'm looking forward to seeing Mike Ford again. I'll be at that one.
Are you?
Yeah.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Then Sunday, Northampton-Gloucester.
Interesting game, this.
This is a tasty game, isn't it?
So Northampton are on 41 points in fifth place. They're pushing to jump. There's an eight-point gap to Quins and then one more point to Gloucester. So Northampton with a win will move within 5 points of Gloucester and be really pushing for that top four.
This is for Gloucester. This is their top four game because I think if they win, if they beat Northampton, they're not going to be caught.
Correct.
And I think they'll be treating it as such, as in let's get the job done now, and we can really manage our approach to the playoffs. Mm.
So Northampton. This would be a good game because both these teams can really play a bit now.
They can.
So high scoring would be my prediction. Which way it goes, I do not know.
So I'm going to go for Gloucester, and I think Northampton's pack is decent. It's not got the physical edge that Gloucester has.
I think I'm going to go with Northampton. They're at home, good run of form. They're scoring free. They're scoring fairly freely. I quite fancy them to do something here.
I don't think they'll get as much ball as they are used to.
Gloucester have had a rest week. Northampton have had...
Oh, yeah, a beat down in...
Beat down Claremont, although they didn't shame themselves in that. But I do think Gloucester will edge this one, but it'll be unbelievably tight. And home advantage counts for so much.
It does, it does. Gloucester, what are they going to do without Danny Cipriani if he leaves?
If he leaves?
I don't think he will. I think we would have heard more by now if he was going to leave.
Well, it sounds like Bath might be a bit interested in him.
No, it sounds like Bath... Well, again, as much as you can take with a pinch of salt anything you read in a paper or whatever, but the reports seem to be saying that Bath have tried and failed for a number of fly halves, Danny Cipriani included, Andre Pollard included.
Oh.
Who else?
So they're going to look at Sippers, Pollard, Cruden.
Cruden, yeah.
There was another one that I've forgot. Ainscombe,
yeah.
Ainscombe, I mean, he's had a good Six Nations, not the fly half Bath are hoping
for. Yeah, and you don't know how much Ainscombe was genuinely interested, or Sippers was genuinely interested, or whether it was just leverage. You don't know any of these things, but yeah. Bath, by the sound of it, Bath are desperate for a fly half, according to the reports, which may or may not be true. And if that is the case, then I wonder what Freddie Burns and Reece Priestland are thinking.
Well, yeah, so it sounds like Priestland's gone. There were some rumours about him coming up to North West. Hopefully that isn't a thing. It's interesting times because they're going to spend an enormous amount of cash on someone. I just can't wait to find out who it is.
Presumably they're already spending an enormous amount of cash on, yes, on Burns and Priestland.
Yeah, so if Freddie Burns is on his Leicester money, which was good because it had to be good to get him from Gloucester, and then he's had a pay bump in the Ford one, and then there's also the case that wasn't Priestland like one of the top paid players at Bath?
There's talk of his wages. I don't know the answer, but there's talk of 300 plus.
Oh my word.
That's what I've heard.
I mean, I mean, I'm a financial advisor. You guys are familiar with numbers. That's a lot of money.
Is it?
That is a lot of money.
Let me make a note of that. Yeah. It is a lot of
money.
Okay, good, thanks.
Who would you get for 600,000? Who would your number
well,
one...
Well, that's the point. I would get someone for 600,000, not two £300,000 fly halves.
Owen Williams, he needs a pay bump.
AJ, well, if Bath are talking to Reece Priestland, I'd be splashing my cash on AJ McGinty. Because with Rob Dupria going, I think he'll be the number one fly half at sale next season.
Not be the number one fly half at sale.
I think he will be.
AJ will be. That's the end of that. That's the end of that conversation, Tim Cocker.
And that's probably the end of the podcast.
Yes.
All right, and fine.
Yeah.
Whatever. Tell us where we can find us.
You can go and watch, and you can go watch on YouTube. Subscribe there. See the colour clash between JB's RAF shirt and pink socks. You can follow us at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. You know where else.
Exactly. Good luck, RAF, on Friday.
Yes.
See you next
week.
Glad
we're finishing. I need a pee.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.